come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got to the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Rose intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. I am with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. We'll also continue to preview the upcoming regular season matchups as we will talk Carolina Panthers with Brian Strickland momentarily, senior writer for Panthers.com, as both of those teams will square off in Week 15 here at MetLife Stadium. We'll get to your calls a little bit later on in the program, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We'll delve into a number of different topics once we preview the Carolina Panthers. We have a feature up on Giants.com, 30 questions in 30 days, getting you set for training camp. And today's question, I think, is very interesting because it focuses on a specific defensive statistic that the Giants want to improve on. And I want to hear what you have to say as we take you across till the top of the hour. We'll also tell you the latest in terms of open practices for training camp and so forth. And we'll open it up on the floor in terms of anything else you want to get into with respect to the roster as the Giants get ready for training camp, which is going to be here before you know it. It will get started next week, and there's going to be a number of open practices starting next Friday. This will be the last program for this week. Big Blue Kickoff Live will be back up and running on Monday, and we'll keep you posted with all the details that are relevant to the New York Football Giants. We've been previewing each and every one of the regular season matchups over the last few weeks. Today, as I mentioned, we're going to focus on the Carolina Panthers, a team that the Giants have faced off with over the last few seasons, and both of these teams will meet in Week 15. The game will be here at MetLife Stadium, and as I mentioned off the top, we are now joined by Brian Strickland, senior writer for Panthers.com, to provide a little bit more insight what to expect from the Carolina Panthers this season. Brian, Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Things are going well, Lance, as they are for you. I'm standing overlooking Bank of America Stadium as we speak, which is quiet right now, getting ready to have a big soccer match here Saturday. But look forward to seeing those goalposts go up soon and really get things kicked off.
Absolutely. Same for us over here as training camp is literally around the corner. So, Brian, let's start with the quarterback situation here for Carolina. And Cam Newton's coming off a campaign in which he was able to post his first postseason victory. He got a nice contract extension this offseason. How much of a turning point was last year for Cam Newton? And given the fact that, you know, they brought in a number of wide receivers this offseason, whether it be via the draft or free agency, how much is that going to help this offense take the next step forward?
Yeah, I mean, last year was an interesting year for Cam Newton, to say the least. And one, more than anything, that I feel like he learned a lot about himself, about what's going to make him a success long-term in this league. And lessons that he seemed to carry over to OTAs and mini camp, and I expect to see more of the same at training camp. I mean, you know, I'm much documented. I mean, he had ankle surgery last off season that set him back. Wasn't full go even come training camp, and then a rib injury in the preseason, and then of course, you know, the car accident, that scary moment late in the regular season. I mean, more problems to battle than he had really his first three seasons combined, and I was just impressed by how he did battle them. He made his way through that. Amazing that he played 1 week after the car accident. He made a great turnaround the last month of the season, won his first playoff game, as you mentioned, competed at Seattle, just a couple plays here and there, really made a big difference in that game. And then he hit the ground running full go this offseason. Like I said, unlike last season, he was really the leader you would expect from your quarterback throughout that entire process. And he looked sharp, he looked crisp, he looked energized, he energized the whole team. And I think we're just going to see more of that come this regular season.
It goes without saying, Brian, the offensive line is so important to how an offense functions. And if you look at last season, similar to what the Giants had to deal with, it was really a game of musical chairs on the Panthers' offensive line. Multiple injuries. Very rare that the same five players were out there for each and every contest. How does this offensive line look thus far as they enter training camp, and how much improvement do you expect out of this group?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a struggle last year. I mean, injuries, you know, personnel disappointing here and there. Seven different combinations over the first 7 weeks of the season as far as the line. And then in a strange situation, the light bulb kind of went on. And I say strange because it was a blowout loss at Minnesota on a bitterly cold day. But yet within that, they had the biggest rushing day of the year, having inserted Mike Remmers in at right tackle, a guy they had gotten off the Rams practice squad. They had a couple of rookies begin to come into their own and get healthy. And that was the beginning of quite a final month of the season where Jonathan Stewart was just 3 or 4 yards behind DeMarco Murray for the rushing lead in the NFL, and that continued into the postseason. And now you look at this year, so you feel like there's stability in four spots versus where they were, say, you know, mid-last season. But you have a new guy left tackle in Michael Orr, a name that NFL fans and moviegoers know very well as the blindside guy. And that's going to be, you know, probably the biggest thing to watch as far as the offensive line as we go into this thing. I mean, you're talking about a former first-round pick who really flourished his first couple years in Baltimore when he had John Matsko as his offensive line coach, and Matsko is the offensive line coach here in Carolina. And he's excited about being reunited with him and feels like it's going to allow him to get back to how he played early in his NFL career.
Brian, you mentioned that the rushing numbers were quite impressive last season despite the game of musical chairs on the offensive line. But, you know, Cam and company were sacked well over 40 times, which put Carolina in pass protection near the bottom of the rankings. You know, how much of an area has that been emphasized this offseason? You mentioned they brought in Michael Orr, who, you know, had a relatively up-and-down campaign with Tennessee last year. But where is that improvement expected to come from as they look to protect Cam Newton this season?
Yeah, I mean, that is a concern. I mean, that's been well documented as well. Cam's been hit more than any other quarterback in the NFL over his time in Carolina, and that caught up with him some last year, no doubt, with the injuries that we discussed. Certainly a point of emphasis. The biggest thing I would say about that was that over the course of the year, you know, there were a lot of sacks given up. But I go back to what I said over the course of the last month, over the course of the last two postseason games. I would say there was a lot of growth there that will carry over that the season as a whole stats don't really reflect. So they're in a good place right now coming into this season based on how last season ended.
Talking with Brian Strickland, senior writer for Panthers.com. Carolina over the last few seasons has had a running back by committee, usually a dual threat in D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Williams heads to Pittsburgh this offseason, so Stewart, I'm assuming, is now penciled in as the guy. How do you expect the carries to be split up over the course of this season? You know, Mike Tolbert, upon his return late last season, it seemed that really rejuvenated the running game. How would you assess the situation in terms of the backfield right now?
Well, that's something, one of the top things I'm going to be watching throughout training camp. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. The Panthers actually lead the NFL in rushing yards dating back to 2008, if you go from 2008 through 2014. And Jonathan Stewart's a big part of that, but so was D'Angelo Williams. Both of them were together for that whole time, kind of a dynamic duo, you know, pretty much split carries all that time. You know, D'Angelo struggled last year. Jonathan took advantage of the opportunity. Jonathan was able to stay healthy, and that has been a concern for him. So when you think about a 16-game season with Jonathan Stewart without D'Angelo Williams, who's going to back up Stewart is a big question mark. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You mentioned Mike Tolbert. As fullbacks go, they definitely like to give him his opportunities, but they also like what he does as a blocker. So you start to look at Cameron Artis Payne, a rookie they picked in the fifth round out of Auburn, who has a lot of experience with zone read offenses. He's a little more mature. He's 26 years old, so not your typical rookie age. Certainly physically ready for the challenge. And then think about him. And then the other guy to watch is Fozzie Whitaker, a guy they signed really on the first day of training camp last year. No one figured, you know, was much of a factor in the roster. And lo and behold, you know, became a contributor, a third guy throughout the year. Probably scored the most important touchdown of the season for the Panthers with a screen pass. He turned into a long touchdown in the playoff win over the Cardinals. And, I mean, this guy just has a big heart, but he's not necessarily a big back. He'll run hard for you. But whether he'll be a change of pace guy or, you know, whether Cameron Artis Payne will be that guy, that's the kind of thing that's going to be interesting to watch at training camp.
the identity of this team over the last few seasons, Brian, has been that running game. But if you go back to 2 years ago, Carolina flourished in terms of the passing game. Cam spread the wealth, and then last offseason, it seemed as if one wide receiver after another left town, so he wasn't really left with as much depth and as many options last season. You move the clock forward to this year, between the draft and free agency, Carolina seemed to bring in some more weapons for him. Ted Ginn is back. Jared Boykin was brought in, the former Packer. They drafted Devin Funchess in round two by moving up to grab him. You know, is there as much depth, would you say, as you saw in 2013 in terms of the options that Cam Newton now has to turn to through the passing game?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good comparison. I'm excited about the options. I mean, last year was pretty much a start-over year for that group, and it played out that way when you have a rookie in Kelvin Benjamin end up leading the team in receiving yards, 1,000 yards receiver. You know, I know we're not talking about tight ends yet, but, of course, Greg Olsen played a big part at tight end in that transition, also a 1,000-yard receiver last year. And then, you know, there were more subtle moves made by, like, a rookie Corey Brown, formerly Philly Brown, who, you know, really came on late in the year and, you know, showed some Ted Ginn-esque qualities the way Ginn had flashed for the Panthers when he was with them in 2013. Then you had Ginn back as well, and you mentioned Devin Funchess. You know, another big receiver like Kelvin Benjamin. Obviously, Greg Olsen is a big target. The Panthers like the way Cam Newton functions with big receivers. And, I mean, it seems like every year at training camp, there's always intrigue in wide receivers. Fans love to talk about the position, love to watch who's going to make the roster, who's not going to make the roster. And that's the case again this year. But I feel like when you talk about that last spot, who's going to be the last guy to make it, there's just much more talent there than there was last year. I mean, you know, Stephen Hill is a guy, former Jet, that's gotten a lot of talk and chatter here in the offseason as a guy to keep an eye on, who was on the practice squad last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think the depth has definitely improved, and the top-end choices as well.
Brian, you mentioned Devin Funchess, a big, tall target similar to Kelvin Benjamin. And after that pick, a lot of people said, well, wait a minute, they're so similar. You know, doesn't Carolina want a little bit more versatility in the receiving core? From what you've seen during OTAs and minicamp, how do they complement one another, these two young wide receivers, and how much do you anticipate this helping to open things up on offense?
Well, I mean, I think they work well together. They are similar, but think about from a defensive perspective. Most defenses, you know, are not necessarily equipped to guard two big receivers like that at the same time. I mean, you know, typically you'll have a corner who's maybe on the bigger side and is, you know, prepared to try to match up physically with a Kelvin Benjamin. But in effect, even though they're kind of potentially the same guy, the Panthers would love for Funchess to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. They still create matchup problems, in effect. And then as far as, like, you know, having a variety of options and different looks within the group, we kind of already talked about Ted Ginn and Philly Brown, kind of a young version of Ted Ginn. I mean, when they put three receivers out there and that third guy's Ted Ginn, the guy's still got the speed that he's always had. You have to, you know, respect that speed, and he or Philly Brown really open things up underneath for the big guys. And you know, the big guys certainly need to work on their hands and, you know, make sure they're sure receivers. But it creates an interesting combination that not a lot of teams present.
Plenty of new faces on offense. The defense, for the most part, you know, has its core back in place. And one of the things I know you wrote about on your website, Brian, and in terms of the numbers that are showcased over the last few seasons, Carolina's been very steady on defense, and maybe it's a team that somewhat falls under the radar, especially since everybody was under 500 in the NFC South last season. But what do you attribute to why this defensive unit has been so consistent over the last few years?
Well, I mean, it starts with two names in my mind, and one of them certainly, even though the Panthers have been under the radar, Luke Kuechly, the middle linebacker, has not been under the radar. You know, this guy that has led 3 years in the league, he's led the league in tackles 2 years. The 1 year he didn't lead the league in tackles, he was named NFL Defensive Player of the Year. And it's not just about the stats with him. I mean, he's a coach on the field, gets guys in the right place, just clearly, obviously, based on the stats, is always around the ball, and you pair him with Thomas Davis as well. I mean, I don't think there's a better tandem of linebackers in the league right now. And then I mentioned Luke as being a coach on the field. The coach on the sideline, Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator, former Eagles defensive coordinator, you know, he has really come into his own the last couple years. On the young side, especially when he was in Philly, the kind of his second chance here, you know, has really developed an identity for this year with the help of those key players. And, of course, you can't help but mention that, you know, the stability and the ability they have up front, you know, with the front four. I mean, obviously it all starts there, and it sets the table for those linebackers to do what they do.
Speaking of linebackers, in round number one this year, they draft Shaq Thompson, who it seems has played just about every position known to man in football at one point, Brian. How do they plan to utilize him this season? Because he's essentially so versatile, a secondary player, a linebacker, and he can even work special teams. So how is Carolina focusing in on him, and how do they plan to showcase him this season?
Yeah, another big thing to watch at training camp. But we did get to see a little bit of that at OTAs. Shaq was not out there the whole time with going to the University of Washington. They have a quarter system. That put him a little behind as far as, you know, had to finish up school, so he missed some time here. Also got a hamstring injury that limited him a little bit. But, you know, that was one of the most intriguing players in the draft class, if you ask me. Like, people, you know, said he'd go in the 20s, he could go in the second round. And the biggest, you know, question was, what position did this guy play? So the Panthers had a clear picture in their mind that this guy is a linebacker. Now, within that, that's where his versatility is really going to show. And I think they're going to work through that throughout the preseason. You know, they think that he has the smarts to get it done, even as a rookie. But they've got to figure out, and it's still going to take time, what roles exactly he can fill. I think, you know, initially one of the things they're most excited about is they did not hesitate to use the nickel a lot last year. They had five defensive backs and just Keekly and Davis out there more than they really had their base 4-3. And they think in Shaq Thompson, this is the guy that can allow them to leave three linebackers out there a lot more often. They love his ability to match up with tight ends, and we know what a weapon tight ends can be, especially in this division, I would say, although had a couple of departures here recently with Tony Gonzalez and Jimmy Graham, but still, they like the idea of Shaq Thompson being a guy that can match up on elite tight ends.
I'm sure Carolina not complaining that Jimmy Graham no longer in the division, as you just alluded to, talking with Brian Strickland, senior writer for Panthers.com. One of the most interesting additions that they brought in this offseason, Brian, in terms of at least veteran leadership, was Charles Tillman, who many people remember from his days with the Bears. He's battled some injuries over the last few years. You know, what is a player like that going to bring to a defense that, as we just discussed, has been very consistent, but, you know, when you look at the secondary, there's a few young guys. How do you see him working his way into this group and the type of impact that he'll ultimately make?
Yeah, the secondary is the last group people pretty much talk about when they talk about the Panthers' defense, and they want to do something to change that, and Charles Tillman is a guy that can contribute to that cause. I mean, first of all, just watching him at OTAs, and I know I use the term with Luke Kuechly, but another coach on the field. I mean, one thing Charles Tillman has always brought is just this amazing nose for the football and ability to create turnovers. And the Panthers have been good, not great, as far as creating turnovers is concerned. And you just seeing him out there every day, you know, kind of showing some of his tricks of the trade, some of the things that make him so good at that to the young guys. Just that is invaluable. And then, you know, I think he still had something left in the tank. I mean, just 2 years ago, you know, this guy was still considered an elite player at his position. And then, certainly getting up in age, but the injuries the last 2 years, you know, the triceps both years, could be considered somewhat fluky in nature. And it also, you know, for the sake of it's stung for the Bears, but for the sake of the Panthers, it means he has a couple less years of tread on the tires. And he's going to be in the mix, you know, quite potentially to be a starter at quarterback. It's going to be a battle, again, to watch in training camp. And you just can't underestimate what his leadership is going to do regardless of his role.
When everybody looks at last season, Brian, and I touched on this earlier, you see the NFC South and you see four teams that finished below 500, and everybody started to speculate there should be changes to the divisions and so forth. But obviously, that's what happens when you have a great deal of parity in the NFL. As you look out the layout of this division, Carolina's made changes. You mentioned some tight ends have left this division. You know, what do you expect out of this division this season? I mean, I could see everybody pretty much bouncing back. There is a rookie quarterback in Tampa Bay. New Orleans has focused a lot on defense, but based on some of the transactions that have taken place in the offseason, what are your expectations of this division overall this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, and I think you're right about, you know, how everybody could bounce back. It seems like just yesterday that we were talking about how much the NFC West was struggling, you know, with the Seahawks making the playoffs with a losing record, and how, you know, what, 3 years later, maybe 4 years later, all the talk is about that being the best division in football. So things do change quickly, and, you know, I wouldn't want to be in the prognostication business in the NFL because it is so unpredictable. But I do, you know, I do think it's going to be a close race again. You know, the Panthers were the first team ever to win the division back-to-back years last year, so there's always a lot of turnover in this division. I mean, I don't expect a losing record to win the division this year. I don't think I'm going out on a limb with that. But, you know, I expect the Panthers to be right there. You know, Atlanta is excited about their coaching change and trying to get an identity on defense. So they have plenty of weapons on offense. You know, the Saints was a surprise last year. I thought they were, you know, primed for another good season, and for some reason their defense didn't click after it had a great 2013. So if they can find that whatever was missing last year, hard to put your finger on, they're right back there. And obviously the Bucks are an up-and-coming team to watch with Jameis Winston, a quarterback. Always interesting to see what number one overall pick is going to do at quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, I see, like, anything and everything can happen in this division, but given the way the Panthers finished last year and that, you know, ugly record or not, that they won it last year, I mean, I certainly feel good about their ability to possibly repeat.
The goal is to get there. You don't get any brownie points in terms of how you go about doing that. Brian Strickland, senior writer for Panthers.com. Brian, really appreciate the time and the insight, and I guess we'll be seeing you here at MetLife Stadium come week 15 this year.
Yeah, looking forward to it, guys. Maybe we can have a competitive Panthers-Giants game this year. I was looking back. The last four times these teams have met, it's been an average of a four-touchdown margin with each team winning twice. So maybe we can have a nail-biter. That would be fun.
That would be fun. That is some statistic. Brian, thanks again. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
You got it. Brian Strickland, kind enough to give us a few minutes to break down the Carolina Panthers. And off the top of my head, the disparity that he was just alluding to, you remember the last time the Giants went to Carolina, that was a lopsided game where the Panthers just got to the quarterback tons of times, and it was a rough game for the Giants' offensive line. And then the previous time, which was also in Carolina, the Giants took care of business. It was a Thursday night game. Ramsey's Barden, if you recall, had a huge game in that contest, and the Giants did plenty of damage on the ground. Andre Brown doing most of the damage. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So the remainder of the program, it is in your hands. We're going to get to as many phone calls as we can. We'll get to your tweets. As I mentioned, I do want to hear your thoughts on the 30 questions in 30 days topic. Today's question, just to review, is what defensive statistic is it more important for the Giants defense to improve on this season? Now, my answer is written on our website, as Dan Salamo, John Schmelk, and I have answered all 30 of these questions, and it's certainly a feature that we advise you to check out on the website each and every day. I went with, obviously, stopping the run. I think it goes without saying, you know, those statistics jumped off the page last season. The Giants allowed a league-worst 4.9 yards per carry. They were 30th against the run, and a 100-yard rusher came to the forefront four times in a six-game stretch. So, you know, those numbers are certainly ones that the Giants want to improve upon. And my producer, David Dominic, brought up a good point, and an article is focusing on this on Giants.com today. John Beeson was on SiriusXM NFL Radio the other day, and one of the things that he mentioned that Spags has been focusing on, and this is not necessarily a statistic that everybody gets overwhelmed with, but Spags has been telling the defense this season, taking it beyond stopping the run, stopping yardage after contact. And that could go after a short pass or after a run. And that's very interesting that that's what this Giants defense is focusing on, because if you go back to the last few seasons, and I'm sure Giants fans could pick up a number of different examples, You know, the Giants, more often than not, they're there. They're in position to make a stop, but because of a miscue or a missed tackle here or there, all of a sudden the opposition picks up additional yardage. So that is an area, and that is some decent insight out of John Beeson to look forward to this season, where the Giants, it's not just about stopping the run, stopping the pass. It's more about, you know, even if the opponent does some damage through the air or does some damage on the ground, when you make your initial contact, make sure you bring that player down. So John Beeson on the record saying that that has been a discussion that has been key over the course of the offseason. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the phone lines, obviously, with you over the remainder of the program. AJ in South Carolina gets us going. AJ, what's happening?
I'm doing good. I want to answer your question.
Sure.
I think the Giants defense, they gave for a lot of big plays.
Well, big plays, I think, is part of that whole yardage after the catch, which is what John Beeson alluded to. The fact that you certainly, like you said, AJ, you don't want to give up big plays through the air or on the ground. And, you know, that was an area of concern for the Giants over the course of the last few seasons, specifically last year. If you look at Dallas, Seattle, those two games in particular, you know, the opposition had a number of big plays, and obviously that put the Giants' defense in a very precarious situation.
I think the Giants won defense with a pool on paper with the digits like Kendrick Ellis and George Selfie.
Well, based on the personnel that they brought in, AJ, I would certainly agree and appreciate the phone call. I think that the emphasis this season, as AJ just alluded to, was to bring in players that, you know, are going to fill those holes and stop the run and be a presence. And Kendrick Ellis, known for his run-stopping ability. George Selfie, known for stopping the run, too, but also getting to the quarterback. If you look at his numbers with the Cowboys over the last few seasons, you know, he was pretty much the heart and soul of the pass rush, given the fact that they lost to Marcus Ware and they had a number of other players that went down via injury. So Selfie did a lot of the heavy lifting for that Cowboys defense. Rod Marinelli, you know, would always point to him as the guy to help ignite that defense. And this is now a player that, you know, the Giants will utilize and rotate in with a number of other players, such as the Robert Ayers of the world, the DeMontre Moores of the world, and so forth. But I would agree with AJ. I think based on the moves that the Giants made this offseason through the draft, specifically in free agency, the focal point was let's bring in big bodies, let's make sure we stop the run, and let's make sure that we make it very difficult on the opposing quarterback. Let's head back to the phone lines. Ryan is in Baltimore. Ryan, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, how's it going, buddy? I just received the project starters for us, and I'm not too crazy about it. I still don't understand how Preston Parker has a job or Ruben Randall, and I don't understand how at least Preston Parker's not starting. Ruben Randall's to be projected as a starter. I'd rather see Cruz, Odell, Larry O'Donnell at the end, or at least Corey Washington. I seen another one that made me question why is Rashad Jennings still the starter and not Andre the Giant? Those are question marks right there. I know it's saying projected, but I don't see how they're even projected to start.
Well, in terms of the receiving core, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily get so caught up in terms of the depth chart. Right now, obviously, the whole point is the Giants have a number of numbers to protect them in terms of injuries. But, you know, in terms of the starting group, I don't think anything's going to be a big surprise. You have Odell Beckham. Yo, Victor Cruz is ready to go for the start of the year. And Ruben Randall is your third wide receiver. Plus, you have Larry Donnell, who's coming off a very productive campaign. Everybody else that you alluded to, like a Preston Parker, a Dwayne Harris, a Corey Washington, you know, those are the second tier of the depth chart at this point. But I think the starters are pretty self-explanatory when it comes to who's expected to be out there, Ryan, at least in terms of catching passes from Eli Manning. I don't see that being much of a mystery as we get ready for training camp.
Right, so how come, you know, Andre is not in that mix, Andre Williams? Then I've seen a corner, Tremaine McBride. I mean, you know, it's looking shaky.
Well, Andre Williams is a running back, and they're going to utilize three running backs this season, Robert. They're going to have Rashad Jennings, they're going to have Andre Williams, they're going to have Shane Vereen. I don't think there's going to be one main guy that's going to get 20 to 25 carries. The whole point is to spread the wealth. So, for example, let's say you run the ball 30 times during the course of a Giants game this season. You expect Rashad Jennings will probably lead the pack. He'll have about 15. Andre Williams, 10. And then Vereen in the ballpark of about 5. And I could see them basically being utilized in various roles. Jennings is the type of guy, he could be a goal line back. He can catch passes. He can run in between the tackles. Williams can run in between the tackles. He can certainly be a goal line back. And Vereen, I don't necessarily think of as a goal line back, but he can catch passes and gain a handful of carries. So, you know, to me, it really doesn't make a difference who's 1, 2, or 3 in the backfield depth chart. They're all going to get their fair share of playing time. With respect to Tremaine McBride, McBride right now is penciled in as the slot corner. And McBride has the most experience in that slot position now that Walter Thurmond is no longer on the team. You know, other options are Jaron Hosley, Mike Harris, Shockey Brown could even be utilized out of the slot. And we may see some safeties depending on how creative Spags gets. But, you know, remember, it really depends on, Robert, at the end of the day, how does Spags like to utilize his defensive players? Is he going to go with 3 linebackers? Is he going to go with the extra corner? Will he throw out a 3rd safety? Until we really see training camp, it's hard to necessarily gauge at this point, you know, how much they're going to rely on the slot corner. How much are they going to rely on the 3rd linebacker? I think we need to see more during the course of training camp in the preseason before we get a better idea of what Spags anticipates he's going to utilize.
Right. I mean, I know, man. I don't know. I think the so far roster just needs to be, it's a lot of holes there, you know, like, and I like the Vereen and Andre at the 1-2 punch. I mean, Jennings maybe at the line, you know, goal line. I can understand that. But, like, certain players are still on our roster that shouldn't be there, you know, especially on the wide receiving core, you know.
Well, Ryan, keep in mind, remember, the rosters are at 90 right now because everybody has a lot of numbers in camp. They're protecting themselves from injuries, and this is how you foster competition. So I wouldn't necessarily get so caught up in who's on the roster. They can only keep 53 at the end of the day. Obviously, players are going to be cut, but the goal is right now to have power in numbers so that you can throw different looks out and see who's the best fit for your offense and your defense. But there is no official depth chart at this point. The Giants haven't released anything. That's why, you know, we're really going to see a lot, I think, in the early days of training camp where they finally put the pads on. You're going to see some competition and some physicality, which was not necessarily apparent during the course of OTAs and training camp.
Right, I got you. So, I mean, you know, man, I just seen the project. You know, I just got an alert about a project roster, so I was just looking like, you know, I wasn't too satisfied. But then again, it's still early, so.
Well, it is very early. Training camp does get started next week, and Ryan, appreciate the phone call. But at the end of the day, it's very early to tell who's going to be penciled in as a starter across the board. But, you know, getting back to a couple of the positions that he threw out, wide receiver, I think, is pretty much set for the most part. The battle is going to be for the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, those type of spots. Running backs, you know who the main 3 workhorses are going to be. And in terms of defense, you know, your starting corners are DRC and Prince. As to who is going to be a backup corner, slot corner, I think that remains to be seen. But right now, I would pencil in Tremaine McBride, at least is the guy who's going to get the most looks, the most reps at that slot position, given before he went down via injury last season, he certainly was the most consistent player on the roster in terms of that department, other than them utilizing Antrel Roll and some other corners like Terrell Thomas when he was here. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys. To answer today's question, I think stopping the one is the obvious, you know, answer. You know, it'll help with the pass rushing. It'll help with this time possession. But I think the one area that we really need to stop or work on is to limit plays under 20 yards. It seems like the last few years, how many times I saw people blowing by our corners and safeties. And, you know, it's so disheartening. It kind of sucks the life out of a defense when, you know, you're trying to compete and people are just, you know, having huge plays against you. I think that was, you know, kind of one of the big holes in Fewell's defense. They were letting up way too many big long plays. And I think that really just kind of is deflating for the whole team when that happens.
Well, I would agree with you, Abdul. And I think that we saw that on the ground and through the air. And one of our previous callers mentioned that, you know, obviously the key is to limit the big plays. When you give up nearly 5 yards per carry, clearly that is a result of giving up some big plays. And I'm going to bring up the numbers in a little bit, but, you know, I charted pretty much all the running plays over the course of last season, and there were a lot of runs for 10 yards or more each and every game. And that's something that obviously they want to put a stop to this year.
That Seattle game was just a perfect example of that. Just, you know, they were just ripping up huge chunks of yards. It's just so deflating. I have another question that just made me think about this morning. In the next CBA or whatever, do you think it will ever be a reality when they up the 53-man roster to, say, maybe a 70-man roster? Just for more competition, for more health, just to have a little more – just I think it will make the NFL a better product. Do you think that will ever, ever happen? And if not, or why not?
Well, I think that what they have looked to expand is the practice squad. I mean, that has been a step in the right direction, so this way you can keep some players who you think have some upside, and then you could always elevate them to the main roster. I would say the chances of them moving the roster up to the ballpark of 70 probably wouldn't come about, Abdul, unless they actually expand the amount of games. And I know there's been a lot of chatter about maybe taking away some preseason games, making it an 18-game regular season. Then I could see the NFL Players Association arguing, okay, now we want more job opportunities, more games, the rate for injury goes up. But until they perhaps expand from 16 games, I'd be very surprised that it would skyrocket from 53. If anything, I could see a continued expansion for the practice squad, not so much the actual 53 roster.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it, Abdul. Thanks so much for the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's head to Twitter. I know a number of people sending in some questions and comments. Joe Henderson at Jendy_Hendy. When the Giants go 3 and 4 wide, which receivers would you expect to be in the slot more, and which should be outside? Well, you look at a player like Victor Cruz, he has experience both in the slot and on the outside. So if they go 3 or 4, you know, Cruz would be one player I would look to throw in there. Preston Parker would be another one. He's had plenty of experience out of the slot, too. Odell Beckham, you know, you can move him in the slot, too. But I would say more often than not, Beckham will be on the outside. Randall would be on the outside. Cruz and Parker are probably your two guys that would be in the slot. And then Dwayne Harris I would also throw out there as probably a guy that can be in the slot. So three possibilities: Beckham, Corey Washington, Reuben Randall, more outside guys. But I would say that with the versatility in this receiving core, don't be surprised if McAdoo, if they choose to go 4 wide, let's say, which wasn't necessarily showcased much last season, you know, they're going to try to throw different guys in that position. Why? Because why give defenses the same looks? Cruz, Beckham, even Randall at times if you want to get creative. I don't think there's any reason why you can't at least toy with putting those players in the slot. But if you were at least go with the comfort zone, Cruz, Parker, and Harris, based on the X's and O's of the roster, that I would say more often than not would be in the slot. Joe Henderson also writes in, yards per rush needs most improvement, but I want the D to keep opponent's time of possession, low will help the offense score points. Well, if you can wear down the defense and you can obviously limit the opportunities for your offense, that can certainly do wonders for your team. You look at the Cowboys, I think they're probably the best example last season. Part of the reason why the defense had such a big turnaround was because the offense dominated time of possession. But sometimes time of possession, I think we place too much of an emphasis on. And case in point, you know, if you're an offense that scores very quickly and continues to put points on the board, which the Giants showcase more often than not, you know, it doesn't really matter if your offensive time of possession is high or low. The goal is make the most of your possessions. That, I think, is the key. It's not so much did you have the ball for 35 minutes, did you have the ball for 15 minutes. If you're putting points on the board, I don't really think it makes a difference how much time you had in terms of your offensive possession. The goal is to capitalize, and that is something that the Giants did a great deal of late last season. But if they would have had the ball 30 to 40 times, would it have made a difference in the end? Perhaps, but your defense still needs to make stops. and your offense still needs to be productive. So, you know, you could take a lot away from offensive time of possession, but I think at the end of the day, it's all about what you do with those minutes. If you have the ball for 30 minutes, let's say, and all you did was walk away with three field goals, what good is time of possession at the end of the day? 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the phone lines. Shakes joins us. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
Doing well, Shakes. Good to hear from you. What's happening?
It's good to hear from you, too. I got a couple of things here. First thing I want to say is I want to ask you something. Devon Kennard, right? Now, I kind of rate players. You know how I do. And I wanted to know where you see Devon Kennard's ceiling. Like, how high do you see his ceiling going? Because do you see him like a Luke Kuechly type of linebacker that's like A-graded to me? Or do you see him as a Beeson type of player, like a Beeson now? I mean, Beeson was an A type of player early in his career, but now he's like a B type of player to me. And do you see that that's his highest ceiling? Being a B-type of linebacker?
No, I mean, I think Kennard has the ceiling to be an A-type of linebacker based on your terminology that you just threw out. I mean, this is only going to be year two in the NFL. So, you know, are we going to see him get to that point this season? I wouldn't necessarily place the expectations through the roof. But the reason why I think he has a high ceiling, let's leave it at that, Shakes, mm-hmm. is the fact that he's got versatility. You know, I don't see a lot of linebackers that come in and you can immediately see them play on the outside, play on the inside, and if you want to get creative, certainly they have a knack to come up on the line of scrimmage and get to the quarterback. So when you take all of those characteristics into consideration, I mean, how can you not say that he doesn't have a ceiling of an A type of linebacker?
Okay, because at first I was thinking that his ceiling was a B type of player. But as more as I see, like, training camp and how Beeson is talking about him, I'm like, well, maybe he can be an A-type of player. I don't know. I got to see. But Beeson is trying to convince me that, with all the stuff that he's saying.
Well, let me ask you this, Shakes. I mean, I think okay. You bring up an interesting point. What do you consider an A-type of linebacker? And what I mean by that is, forget numbers. I'm talking about what you expect them to do on the field. What would your criteria be?
Sideline to sideline, cleaning everything up.
So I would say Kennard fits that profile. I think he has the versatility to do that over the course of his career. So that's one check mark. What else do you want out of an A-type linebacker, aside from running sideline to sideline?
He got to have that smarts. He got to be able to beat that player before that player gets there.
Okay, well,
That's Ray Lewis type of stuff.
If you look at what he did in college, I think that they put a lot on his plate because he was a smart guy, and that's why he played multiple positions. Part of that was because USC changed defensive coordinators, but I do think he has the smarts and the capabilities to beat out other players and know where his correct assignments are.
And if that's the case, man, he's an A-type of player, and I would enjoy watching that. I wanted to say this about the tackling. I think also we have to get back to gang tackling. You know what I mean? Not single tackles, because I think that's what plagued us in the last few years with Jaquan Williams and the Passengers and that. They all wanted to just tackle by themselves, and there's nobody else there. Like, I need everybody to just get into it, man. Gang tackles. I want gang tackles.
Well, I mean, that's a big part of stopping the run and stopping the pass. It's not necessarily just relying on one player, as you just hit on, Shakes.
Yes.
You're right. You need guys to be in the same vicinity and buy in. And I think that that's an important facet of what the secondary is going to be asked to do this season in terms of, you know, the corners and the safeties, not just matching up with the wide receivers, but I think those four players are key in stopping the run. For example, you know, one of the things that I don't think Prince Amukamara gets enough credit for, and partially I would even throw JPP in this mix, is their abilities to stop the run. You know, while they're expected to obviously match up with their wide receivers and, let's say, offensive linemen respectively, you know, those two players in particular are good at what they do in terms of buying in and stopping the run. And what you just hit on, Shakes, you need everybody on this defense to buy into that. So even if it's not necessarily a strength, they have to understand, hey, I have to improve against the run, or I have to improve against stopping the pass. And that's the way you get a good defense.
No doubt. One last thing, Lance, I just wanted to say. I'm looking at this schedule, and it's a lot of great defenses that we're playing this year. So our offense has to be top in the league, and I think we will. But I'm also looking at the other side with the offenses, and offenses in the East is not all that scary. You know, besides maybe the Patriots, and they don't have a lot of weapons either. It's just Tom Brady factor. And so I think that our defense has to step up the most this season. I expect the offense to be top because we have to because of defenses that we play. But I really hope that this defense can turn around and at least be a top 15 type of defense. And if we are, we can be a playoff team.
Well, I would agree with you, Shakes, and appreciate the phone call. Good chatting with you. I think based on the numbers, it goes without saying that the defense is the area of this team that they want to see the most improvement out of. Because if you look at the offensive numbers, where the team finished was very respectable. Giants were a top 10 offense last season. It may not have started out like that, but once the law of average played out, the Giants finished in the top 10. And their production, specifically, I would say, in the final quarter of the season, maybe I should even say the final two quarters of the season, now you were seeing consistency, you were seeing productivity. And part of that is understandable because sometimes it takes even a veteran quarterback nearly half a season to get adjusted to new offensive terminology. Remember, Odell Beckham missed the first quarter of the year. So it was expected that over the course of the season, you were going to see constant improvement. That unit, barring injury, should pick up where it left off. So therefore, obviously, you turn to the defense as the group. Shakes was talking about the upcoming schedule this season, the fact that perhaps they're going up against some dynamic offenses over the course of the schedule. He was honing in on the AFC East, the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Bills, and then rounding out the group. Obviously, you have other teams to be concerned about, the Jets, who I didn't necessarily name, but you know, I don't think he can necessarily focus in on just the NFC East because that's only a quarter of the season. You're going to play the NFC South. We just previewed the Panthers with Brian Strickland. I'm expecting a bounce-back campaign out of this division, assuming that everybody stays healthy. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily overlook the offenses that the Giants are going up against over the course of this schedule. Now, Buffalo, if you look at the AFC East, Buffalo and the Jets, they have questions via the quarterback position, but if they get decent play out of the quarterback play, if they get respectable play, you have enough weapons around the quarterback where both of those offenses, I think, could do some damage. New England's going to be in good shape as long as you have Tom Brady and you have a decent offensive line. And Miami is in a better position than Buffalo and the Jets because you have Ryan Tannehill. And you have, I think, improvement on defense specifically in terms of some of the free agents that they brought in. You can't take any of these groups for granted. You know, and at the end of the day, remember, the goal is the Giants defense wants to be consistent. And what I mean by that is you want to be consistent when you're going up against teams that you rank low and you also rank high. And this is the perfect reason why I'll say this. A lot of the chatter that we even had on this show last season, when everybody looks at the sack numbers for the New York Giants, and the sack numbers did turn out to be very good in terms of the rankings in the NFL, but what do a lot of people claim? A lot of people claim they were lopsided, that the sacks were very high in the second half of the season compared to the first half of the season, and the second half of the schedule was not necessarily against the same type of caliber teams as the Giants went up against the first half of the schedule. So therefore, if you're going to use that mindset, and you're a believer in that, that they did better against lesser opponents as opposed to top-notch opponents, then the goal is you just want to be a consistent defense. It shouldn't matter who you're going up against. You should be able to get to the quarterback as evenly, whether it's going up against perhaps the New England Patriots or perhaps against a team like, let's throw out the Jets, who come later on in the schedule, who you don't necessarily see equal in terms of the offensive ranking. The goal is to be consistent, and that has to do with scheme, that has to do with strategy, and you don't have to necessarily worry about who the Giants are going up against week in and week out. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Dennis is in Brooklyn. Dennis, what's happening?
Hey, Max. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Dennis. What do you have for us?
Okay, I just have a question, right? I was reading an article on ESPN today. I know the roster is not set yet, and they are projected that the Giants would keep about 6 wide receivers, right? So out of the wide receivers, I saw they cut Corey Washington. And I kind of disagree with that. I would have rather cut Preston Parker. I want to hear your take on that situation.
You said that what? Somebody wrote an article about this in terms of cutting down to six?
They would keep six wide receivers. And one of the wide receivers they cut, who I think was a mistake, was Corey Washington. Because I think he has a lot of upside.
Well,
they kept Preston Parker. But I personally would have rather cut Preston Parker and keep Washington. What would you do if he was GM?
Well, it's going to come down to probably those two guys. I'm just doing some mathematics here in terms of the breakdown. Victor Cruz, Odell Beckham, Ruben Randall, your top three. Dwayne Harris is your fourth guy. You brought him in to be a special teamer as well as contribute as a wide receiver. So if they go with six, which I think they will, then it's really a battle for two more spots, essentially. And you have Preston Parker, you have Corey Washington as an option. Jeremy Davis is another guy who was one of their draft picks this year. You can't necessarily overlook him. There's a chance that Washington and Parker could both make this team. I don't think that that's necessarily a stretch. If you came down to both of them, Corey Washington has looked spectacular in OTAs and minicamp. I think he's by far one of the most standout players this offseason because he sees that the writing is on the wall. He knows there's competition that was brought in. You know, he's been a very versatile wide receiver during the course of offseason workouts because in his mind, he doesn't want to be known as just that goal line wide receiver, that red zone target. He wants to prove that you can basically utilize him when you're at the 50-yard line and you could do some damage. If you're looking for versatility, there is great value in keeping Corey Washington because when you look at the other wide receivers that I just named, you don't have a great deal of height there. So I think Washington would help balance out that group and give you something that the other wide receivers don't necessarily bring to the table, which is something that those other wide receivers can't predict and have no control over. And that's the fact that Corey Washington is 6'4". So the versatility angle, I would lean towards Corey Washington. But it really depends on what Washington proves during the course of training camp and the preseason. He needs to show that he's a consistent wide receiver. Now, Parker has a little bit more of a sample size that you can go towards, and Parker has been productive in this offense when he's been called on, Dennis. Remember, Ben McAdoo brought him in, and Ben McAdoo turned to him when he had a number of injuries last year, specifically Cruz. Beckham was out. So I think he has that working for him. But, you know, if you're looking for versatility and adding a little bit more size, I think Washington has the edge in that department.
All right. I was thinking similar lines, not exactly all the points you put out, but I was like, you know, this guy is 6'4". I would never cut him. But thanks for taking my call, man, and I love the show. I love this show, man, and keep doing what you're doing, guys.
Appreciate that, Dennis. Thanks so much for watching and listening, and appreciate the feedback. Now, just because a guy's 6'4", doesn't mean you all of a sudden pencil him in on the roster. That's why I said, you know, he can build off of a very productive offseason. If he can showcase more of that in the preseason and training camp, it's going to be very difficult to part ways with Corey Washington because that is one player that I think has been extremely motivated this offseason. And it's one of the things that he talked about, you know, when he spoke to the media, and this has been well documented. A number of the clips you can find even on Giants.com. And the media pressing Corey Washington about, you know, wanting to be a well-rounded wide receiver. Is he seeing the fact that they brought in a guy like Dwayne Harris? Does that amp him up a little bit more? And, you know, he's worried about himself. He's not worried about the numbers game. He's not worried about how many guys are in camp. And he proved that during OTAs and minicamp. If we see more of that moving forward in the weeks ahead, as I mentioned, Corey Washington is going to make it very difficult for anybody on this team to want to part ways with him. Because I think he's come a long way from where he was at this point last offseason. James is in Philadelphia. James, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, James. What do you have for us?
I want to talk about the defensive line and JPP. Now, they was talking yesterday about, you know, filling in for the defensive end or whatever. What's the guy that they just got from the Cowboys?
George Selby.
Yeah, now I would think that would be like a nice fit for the left side defensive end because he's like he's a nice run plugger and whatnot.
I agree with you. I think Selby is a well-rounded defensive lineman, and I've continued to emphasize this on the program. He's not just known for getting to the quarterback. He's underrated in stopping the run. And, you know, that's an area that we've been discussing on this program that the Giants are looking to improve upon. So he's a player to watch in the preseason and watch in training camp. Aside from Robert Ayers and DeMontre Moore, would not surprise me if Selby carves out a nice role for himself.
Right. And my main thing is, with JPP, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the with his removing the finger, which I don't think that's a big deal, him removing that finger, because he taped his fingers together anyway. But with the fractured thumb, they gave him about six weeks for that to heal, and said that the rest of his hand will heal before that point. Now, being that the doctor said that, so that put him like mid-August or late August, you know, early season, maybe he might miss one game. But I really think JPP is going to be a dominant player this year, just for the fact that all the people saying that he's not going to be able to do it. Because, I mean, except for people running away from you and you got to reach out and grab, you're basically hitting with your head and shoulders and arms wrapping. You're not really doing a whole bunch of stuff with your hands. But I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder this year and just come out and crush the lead. And I do give him – I'll put him back in the double-digit sack area.
Well, that's what JPP produced last season, James, and appreciate the phone call. Everything that James threw out, keep in mind, is pure speculation. I know you've seen the reports and so forth, but you know the Giants haven't come out with any definitive timetable and so forth. And part of that is, you know, JPP needs to sign his franchise tag. I mean, that's the key right now. In terms of a technicality, he's not under contract. But I would agree with James. I think the motivation is going to be there, assuming he's fully healthy and ready to go. You take into consideration his contract. You take into consideration the fact that he had a very strong ending to last season. You know, JPP obviously wants to help turn this defense around. And, you know, one of the things we were talking about with respect to George Selvey, the ability to stop to run. JPP's been a big part of that. And he probably doesn't get enough credit. Now, everybody gets caught up in sacks and where the Giants rank in that department and, you know, how higher they are in comparison to other teams. You don't stop to run. At the end of the day, it really makes no difference where your sack numbers are. Because if you stop the run, then obviously you're going to set yourself up to get better pressure on the quarterback because your opposition is probably going to be faced with third and longs and second and longs. And that's what the Giants obviously want to vastly improve upon. And you have a player like JPP, you have a player like George Selvey, you have a player like Kenrick Ellis. You know, those are three players. Let's not forget Jonathan Hankins, Robert Ayers. You know, these are five players I just named that are not just effective in getting to the quarterback, but are good at stopping the run. And if everybody stays healthy and Spags is able to rotate and mix and match this group, there's no reason why the numbers can't improve in that department. Matthew is in Middleton. Matthew, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Matthew. What's happening with you? What do you got?
Pretty good. I'm just happy to be on the show. I actually listen every day. It's a little hard to get in touch with you guys sometimes.
Well, thanks so much for following the show. So what do you have for us today?
I kind of wanted to piggyback off of what Chase was saying about the gang tackling. I think that's really, really important because I was looking at some tape, and you know, you were saying how Principal Kamara, you know, it does pretty good there. You know, the run, and he also takes care of his assignment as far as, you know, covering the wide receivers and things like that. But if you looked at DRC, and I know he was a little banged up last year, you know, with little injuries, and he fought through it. But there was a lot of plays that he just gave up. And, you know, didn't really give 100% to try and, you know, make that tackle, especially against the Seahawks, and Marshawn Lynch ran all over the place. So, yeah, gang tackling is really important. And then, you know, he was also talking about Devon Kennard and trying to rate him, you know, AD. It's kind of hard to compare him to Luke Kuechly. That's the guy he compared him to. You know, that's more of an A-plus, more than an A-plus, to be honest, because he's like, you know, he's one of those freaks, same thing as Ray Lewis. Mm-hmm. And they just have that high motor. And, of course, you want to see him be that way. But I'd be happy, you know, if he ends up being, you know, just a little bit better than John Peace, you know, as far as leadership role and things like that. He does seem like, you know, he's going to be a good player for us. And I just can't wait, you know, to see what our defense can do. You know, if we do play under Spags and, you know, gang tackle and all that stuff like that.
Well, if you look at how the Giants' defense did under Spags in his first stint as defensive coordinator, 07-08, now clearly they were effective in getting to the quarterback and effective in stopping the run as well. So I think that those are two facets that he's been emphasizing. You know, looking at Devon Kennard, I'm intrigued in how Spags utilizes Kennard because I see a player that, you know, could be a wild card on this defense. And what I mean by that, you know, you can pretty much line him up various positions across the field. He could get to the quarterback. He could help stop the run. Perhaps if he improves, he could be a guy that hopefully can even back up in coverage. You know, every defensive coordinator would love to have a player like that. And I think as he progresses in terms of his improvement and his development, remember, you know, we're talking about a player that's had only 1 year under his belt. So that is a very small sample size. There's no reason why, you know, 4 to 5 years from now, we could be talking about Devon Kennard being an extremely impactful linebacker, not just for the Giants, but across the NFL landscape.
That would be awesome. I have one more question, too. And this is kind of something I've been going crazy about. Does anybody know why Obama Bay of Big Sea, why did his number change to 58? It's kind of making me go crazy. I'm thinking over here that they might use him a little bit as like an outside linebacker, at the line of scrimmage, things like that. Because you did say that Spags had, you know, those hybrid players that just come out of nowhere and, you know, become an impact. And he does have the size for it. I'm not sure about athleticism, but what do you think about that? Is that just something that happens to rookies, you know, numbers change out of nowhere, you know, before the season starts?
Well, most of the linebackers are in that 50 range. Keep in mind, in the NFL, most positions, you know, have the same numbers. For example, wide receivers are in the 80s, and linebackers are mostly in the 50s. So I really wouldn't necessarily read too much into that. It's not necessarily unusual. And remember, you have a lot of players that also are wearing the same jerseys now that the rosters are up to 90. So what happens is as they finalize the roster and so forth, guys can be a little bit flexible in terms of changes. But most linebackers are in that 50 barometer. So there's nothing necessarily that jumps to the forefront that is a surprise with respect to that.
Okay, all right. So I guess I should stop freaking out, Jimmy.
I wouldn't necessarily lose sleep over that, if that's what you're asking.
I wouldn't mind if, you know, he was a little bit of an outside linebacker. I think it would be cool because, you know, there's one more player that can, you know, have a big impact on our defense. But, hey, I mean, hopefully he can step up early on. I know he's a rookie, but he does look like he has a size similar to, like, Justin Tuck. Hopefully he can, learn that defense fast and become an impact for us.
Well, he can certainly play outside linebacker, Matthew, and appreciate the phone call. I mean, the good thing about Kennard, he can back up John Beeson in the middle, and you can play him on the weak side and the strong side. I really don't think it makes any difference because he has the speed and he has the size where he can run sideline to sideline. So you're looking at a three-linebacker type of player where he can play all three positions. And as I mentioned, you can move him up to the line of scrimmage if you want to perhaps blitz and so forth. And he was utilized in all of those spots if you go back to college. You know, part of it may have been actually a blessing in disguise for Kennard that they actually changed defensive coordinators so much while he was at USC. Because as they went from a 3-4 to a 4-3, Kennard had to play multiple positions. That's what helped him become a well-rounded linebacker, or a well-rounded defensive player, I should say. So by the time that all of a sudden he gets to the NFL, the Giants could say, we want to keep you on the line of scrimmage. We want to move you to the outside. We want to move you to the middle. He could pick up on it quickly because there wasn't really a very strong period of time where Kennard stayed in one spot. So that jumping around, I think, actually is going to help him in the long run to perhaps even keep his NFL career on a very positive track, a versatile track. And he certainly has documented that throughout the course of just one season in the NFL. If you look at Kennard's numbers from last season, I mean, what he was able to do, and keep in mind, he was not an every down player, even a starter, very early in the season. His role expanded because he had to be thrown into the mix as a result of all the injuries. But Kennard last season, he finished with 43 tackles. He had 4.5 sacks, and the 4.5 sacks put him as a top 5 pressure guy on this team. JPP was at 12.5. Jonathan Hankins had 7. Demontre Moore, 5.5. Robert Ayers had 5. And then Kennard was 5th, 4.5. To be a top 5 guy in year 1 certainly says a lot about his ability. He had 7 tackles for a loss, 1 pass defense, 2 fumble recoveries. Limited action, a very opportunistic player. So now you assume he's going to be an every-down player or he's going to be penciled in as a starter, barring injury, should be out there for 16 games. There's no reason why he can't match and certainly surpass those numbers. And once again, the wild card is how is Spags going to utilize him? I'm sure he's going to have a few tricks up his sleeve compared to perhaps how previous defensive coordinators and position coaches utilized him. So now there's a great deal of upside with respect to Devon Kennard. And we're getting some tweets in here connected to Devon Kennard. So let's throw out some tweets right before we wrap up the program here on Giants.com. And a lot of people also expect big things out of Devon Kennard this season. I believe somebody even utilized the term Pro Bowler when you look at his makeup. Let's take a look here. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben. I think Kennard could develop into a Pro Bowl talent and playmaker. How many times did we watch Jaquan Williams struggle here or there? Well, Jaquan Williams, who was a previous outside linebacker, you know, had that similar versatility. But I think if you look at what Kennard did in college compared to what Williams did in college, a little bit different, because Jaquan Williams was not moved to the line of scrimmage when he was in college. So I think that if you're going to compare the two, versatility is there, but Kennard was utilized a little bit differently in terms of college. But he certainly has the upside to be a Pro Bowler, assuming that obviously he stays healthy during the course of this season in terms of what he was able to do. Let's try to throw out another tweet or two before we wrap things up. Also, Ben Gruen writes, Dwayne Harris and Jeremy Davis should be special teams aces. Washington is a better receiver than Parker. Keep the younger player. So that's obviously another outlook as the Giants look to narrow it down to potentially six. Who knows how the numbers game is going to play out, but obviously I think six is a good number based on how many they've kept in previous years. Appreciate everybody for weighing in on Twitter, weighing in on the lines, and thanks to Brian Strickland for helping us break down the Carolina Panthers. This is going to be the final show for this week. No program tomorrow, but we'll be back up and running on Monday with new editions of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Just a few announcements. Stay locked to Giants.com. Our entire training camp schedule is up on the site. So if you're thinking about perhaps coming down to the Quest Diagnostic Center, you can take a look at all the open practices over the course of the next few weeks on Giants.com, as well as the mobile app. We have completed our preview of all of the regular season matchups, so we'll start to look ahead at roster breakdowns next week, and we will certainly take a closer look at the roster as training camp will be here in less than a week. So certainly a lot of exciting developments to monitor over the course of the next few days. Appreciate everybody for weighing in over the course of this program as well as the week. Our archive will be up momentarily. Lance Meadow wishing you a good Thursday. We'll speak to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!